If you want to be turning to Genesis, the 37th chapter, we'll get to that in just a little bit. But to start off, I want to ask some questions, okay? David has done this before, and I thought this would be interesting. I know that Andy's a history buff. He likes to read history or about history or watch TV programs about history. How many here like to read about history? Raise your hand. Okay. I had some up here, and I had iffies up here, so. It's all right. Everybody doesn't like to read history. You know, I'm not very good with math, so I don't do much with math. I leave that to my oldest grandchild who teaches it. She's good with that. I like to read history. How many of you like to read a biography about someone's life? A few, okay. That's history also. I like to read history, I like to read biographies, and I like to watch the TV programs like Andy. I watched one the other night, but it was getting about 12 and it wasn't over, so I recorded the rest of it and watched it the next day. But anyway, I like to do that. All right, next question. How many of you have read the book of Genesis? Ah, lots of hands. How many of you have read the Gospels? Okay. How many of you have read Acts? From Genesis through Ezra in the Old Testament, or the Hebrew text, that's history. So if you read any of those books, whether you knew it or not, you're reading history. If you've read the Gospels, it's the history of Jesus' birth, death, resurrection, and his ministry. That's history. If you've read Acts, then you have read the history of the first century church and Paul's missionary journeys. So even if you didn't raise your hand saying you like to read history, if you have read any of those books, you have read history. Next question. How many here like a good story? Everybody likes a good story. Even if you don't read it, you like a good story on television. My wife and I will sit there and we'll watch a program and it'll be a sad thing and we pass the Kleenex box back and forth, you know. Everybody likes a story. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look at a story and we're going to get some points out of it, I hope. In the 37th chapter of Genesis, beginning with verse 1, it says, Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. I looked at that verse this morning. I saw something I never had seen before. It says, Jacob lived in the land where his fathers had stayed, the land of Canaan. Now, if you follow this story all the way through, okay, they're going to end up in Egypt. And they're going to stay in Egypt about 430 years. And then guess where they're going to go? The Promised Land, which is where?
Canaan.
I never had noticed that. That's pretty neat. Took them out of Canaan, put them in Egypt because of the famine, and later on brings them back to Canaan 430 years later. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zelpha, the father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Remember that. That's going to be important. He brought a bad report. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were banging sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brother said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he had told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Okay. In the NIV, which I'm reading, it says, Jacob lived in the land, okay? And then you go down to verse 3, and it calls him Israel. You got two names, Jacob, Israel. So why two names? Now, if you read through the scriptures, you'll find quite often that happens. Abram became Abraham. You have Saul, Paul. And most of the time, there's a significance to that. But why Jacob and Israel? Well, if you're going to read the rest of this story, it makes obvious sense. How many sons did Jacob have? 12. He had 12 sons. Okay? When this story starts out, it's just a family. A father and more than one wife. 12 sons. Probably their wives and their children. So this is a family. They're going to go into Egypt. And while they're in Egypt for 430 years, they're going to build a nation. When they come out of Egypt, they are a nation. Those 12 tribes. I've heard it said that there were at least a 500,000 people or more that came out of Egypt, a lot of people. So you go from 12 to 500,000 plus, you become a nation. That's why the name Israel. And that's why the name today is the country is Israel. Okay. God had a plan from the very beginning. From the very beginning, he had a plan. And he was going to use Jacob and his family in this plan. Now the plan started from the beginning, but he worked through other people. Abraham, Isaac, these all are in the same family tree coming on up. Then from Israel, you're going to have the Lord. Okay? He's from the lineage, this family tree. He's from that family tree. So that's really important. But why did he need a nation? Well, he needed a nation for two separate reasons, I think, at least. One of the reasons he needed it was their job to take the gospel as they knew it in their day and time to the other nations. Unfortunately, they didn't do a very good job of that. And the second reason he needed the nation was he needed a nation from which the Messiah would come, which would be Jesus. So the first point in my lesson is that God always has a plan. In Jeremiah 1:5 it says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you to be a prophet to the nations." he tells Jeremiah, before you were ever even in the womb, I had a plan for your life. You were going to be a prophet to the nations. I believe that God has a plan for everybody here today. I don't know what your plan or his plan for you is, but I do believe he has a plan. I think he had a plan in my life. From the time I was a little boy at Chapel Avenue, David Senior and I have talked about that, I loved to study the Bible. My mother, of course, took me Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, and all those, but it wasn't that. It's just that I loved to do it. From the time I was little, when I was a teenager, I quit going to Chapel Avenue. I started going to Riverwood Church of Christ because they, in the summer they had a thing going on for the young people, and it was a study on I think Monday night. And I would walk from my house, which was about, say, 3 miles over, but I went over there because I enjoyed the study. And then later on, I thought I was going to be a preacher. I didn't turn out to be a preacher. Instead, I turned it out to be a teacher. But I went to Lipscomb for that purpose. And I've taught from the time I was 20-something years old and still teaching. And basically, I've taught young people. So I think God had a purpose in my life, but I think he has a purpose in your life. Now, that does not mean that you have to be a preacher or a teacher or a song leader or any big job, okay? There are a lot of jobs out there. You might be a carpenter. If that's what God wants you to be, then you need to be a carpenter. You be a good carpenter, or electrician, or what plumber, or whatever. It doesn't make any difference. God can use you in all of these jobs. You're still going to meet, greet people. You can still preach the gospel to these people because you're coming in contact with people. And I'll tell you right now, you get more people in the church by personal contact than you'll ever get any other way. I was talking this morning about our young people who went on a missionary trip and knocked on the doors. And they had, was it the first night maybe, but they had one person come. But just one person. And it was because they knocked on the doors. So it's a personal relationship you have. I don't think we do enough with the personal relationship. But I think he has a plan for all of us. We have to be looking for that plan and willing to fulfill that plan. All right. In verse 3, it says that Jacob loved Joseph more than the other sons. So why did he love Jacob more than the other sons? Well, first of all, I believe there was a big age difference. At this time, when the story is told, Jacob is 17 years old, but the other 11 brothers have grown up. They probably already have families of their own, maybe children of their own. So there's a big age difference, okay? And the father and Joseph become close because those other sons are out here tending the sheep or doing whatever needs to be done. He's with daddy. So if daddy goes to the hardware store, he goes with him. Or if daddy goes to the drugstore, he goes with him. Now, I know they didn't have hardware store and drugstores, but you get the idea. Wherever Jacob went, Joseph probably went with him. You build a close relationship. I've got 6 grandchildren, 3 boys, 3 girls. Now, I've got 3 that are grown, okay? They're out working. One of them has a child and a husband. Has a child, has another one on the way, so I'm going to have another great-grandchild. But my youngest grandson, Clint, and some of y'all have met Clint. Clint and I had a real close relationship. The others were grown. And he has 2 sisters, and there's a little difference in sisters and boys. And I was was in the Boy Scouts with him. He went fishing with me, things like that. So I had a close relationship with Clint because the others were out doing stuff. Clint wasn't. Okay, so then I had a grandchild, Samantha, that lived with me for 2 years. I got a close relationship with her. Why? She lived with me. I saw her every day. Okay? In essence, I was not just a grandfather, I was her father. And there was the relationship. Well, I think the same thing happens between Jacob and Joseph. They get this relationship. Okay? That's good and that's bad. Okay, it's not bad to have a relationship. Excuse me. But you can cause jealousy in a family because of these relationships. Okay? You don't need to leave out the other children. Okay? You need to have a relationship with them also. You would think that the older boys in this family would have understood that. But it doesn't seem that they did. They didn't seem to understand it at all. I don't know if you've ever owned a dog. I've owned several of them. You get real attached to them. You take them from a puppy and they grow up, you know. And you love that animal, right? And then somebody brings a puppy. Oh, that puppy's cute. You want to cuddle that puppy and you want to pet that puppy because it's so cuddly and so cute and everything. You still love that dog over there, the older one, but the little cuddly dog, you know, you love it, seems like more. And I think that is similar to the situation that's happened here. Then, the next thing we find is that Jacob made a coat for him, okay? Now, I always call this a coat of many colors. I don't want to bust your bubble, but it was not a coat of many colors. That is just the way they translated it in the King James Version. In this one, it said an ornamental robe. Now, it wasn't an ordinary robe. By any stretch of the imagination, it was an ornamental robe. It was one that you would notice, and it especially was noticed by his other 11 brothers. He didn't give them a coat. He gave Joseph a coat. And that kind of elevated Joseph, you know? And in that day and time, it should have been the eldest. Okay, the eldest son. But in studying this lesson, I find that the eldest son had already got in trouble with his father over a wife. So he, instead of putting that affection to the eldest son, which they might have understood, he puts it towards Joseph, the youngest son. Why did giving the coat to Joseph so upset the other brothers? Because the coat set Joseph in a class apart. There was something about the coat that spoke of leadership, which would ordinarily be reserved for the elder brother who was Reuben, the son of Leah. So that's the difference there. Point two. Never show favoritism where children are concerned. Each child is different. Everybody, every parent in here knows that. No two children alike. Okay? They all have different talents. I had two children. I had a girl and a boy, and I guarantee you they were different as night and day. Never had a problem out of the girl. A boy, otherwise, had all kinds of problems out of him. My daughter is very artistic, as is her grandmother, my wife. They're really good with that. My wife has been sewing and doing stuff for weeks for Christmas. And my daughter, she does jewelry. jewelry. She makes jewelry and stuff. She's really artistic that way. Now, James Allen was never that way. Regina had no problem in school. She made average grades. She wasn't an A student, but she made average grades. She didn't have any problems. James Allen, on the other hand, boy, he had a terrible time in school. He hated school. He would do things just to be suspended, you know? And yet, James Allen could do anything with his hands. He made a cabinet for dishes and so forth. It's beautiful. And my wife has already told my daughter that when she dies, that goes to Clint, because it was his daddy that made it. You want your plumbing done? James Allen can do it. You want electrical work done? James Allen can do it. They're different night and day. So you have to go at them differently. Okay? Jacob really should have known this. You remember Jacob and Esau? Jacob was loved by the mother. Esau was loved by the father. Jacob's mother got him to trick his father to get the promise. That caused a big row in the family, and Jacob had to leave. And he eventually came back, and he was worried when he came back. Esau still might be holding his grudge against me. And what he did was he put his family in front, and he got in the back when they went to see Esau. So Jacob should have known this. We need to learn to cherish each child with obvious love and affection, recognizing their own personalities, their individual capabilities, and their special needs. All right, that was point two. The next thing we see in this is that the jealousy of Joseph's brothers intensified. It gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And there's three reasons for that. The first one you'll find in verse 2. Joseph goes out with the older brothers who are tending the sheep, and he comes back home and he brings a bad report to his father. Now, I don't know what the report is. It didn't tell us that. I don't think he made up something. I think he told the truth. But how many in here like a tattletale? Nobody likes a tattletale. Okay, well, that's what Joseph was. He was a tattletale. You know, he came and told, "Boy, they're out there doing so-and-so." Well, that didn't sit too well with the brothers. It wouldn't sit very well with me. Secondly, they hate him because of the coat. We've already talked about the coat and what the coat represented. So, he's tattletaling on them. He gets his special coat. They can see that the father loves him more than he loves them, or at least it looks that way to them. And the third thing, he had a dream, had two dreams. I don't think he was very smart, to be quite frank. I think if I had these dreams, I'd have kept them to myself, but he didn't do that. He went out there and said, "Oh, I had this dream, and this is what happened, so and so." Now, he might have got away with it the first time, although that's doubtful, but the second time he goes out there? No. The brothers hated him for it. They hated him so much, we'll see eventually in the story, they sell him as a slave to a caravan that's going to go to Egypt. So the big problem here is jealousy. Now, we see jealousy all the time. And it's usually in the field you're in. You know, one golfer might be jealous of another golfer, or a bowler. I never bowl with him. He's way too good for me. Even preachers. You know, well, how many you got in your congregation? Well, I got I got 1,000. You know, so it doesn't make any difference. Jealousy. A statue was erected in honor of a famous athlete. A rival athlete was so jealous of the honored athlete, by cover of night, he came in the evening with a hammer and chisel and would work away at the foundation of this statue. His purpose was to weaken it and bring it down. One night he finally weakened it and brought it down, and it fell on him and crushed him to death. Who does jealousy hurt? It hurts the person that's jealous. The other person probably doesn't even know about it. And if it does, probably doesn't care. So jealousy doesn't hurt anybody but the person who is jealous. We see it in the workplace a lot of times. We ought to be doing the opposite. Okay? That scripture tells us we are to rejoice in someone else being elevated. Usually it's just the opposite. In verse 18 it reads, "But when they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him." This whole story is about jealousy in a family and what it can lead to. I can't imagine. The word hate is used over and over and over in this lesson. Hate, that's a very strong word. You might understand disliked, you know, but hate. These brothers hated Joseph so much that they eventually, well, they were going to kill him. And one of the brothers talked him out of that, and instead they sold him. Do they realize what they're doing? I don't think so, because they are plotting to kill the only one who can save them. Do you ever think about that? They were actually plotting to kill the only person that can save them. Of course, you got to read the rest of the story. Joseph goes into bondage. He's in Potiphar's house. He's in the jail. He ends up interpreting the Pharaoh's dream. He becomes second in the nation. The dream is about a famine that's going to happen. And Pharaoh says, okay, because he tells Pharaoh, he says, we're going to have 7 good years, we're going to have 7 bad years. And so the Pharaoh says, well, who should we put over this but Joseph? And what happens? Famines, nationwide or worldwide. The brothers down there, they run out of food. They've got to go to Egypt to get it. So the person they're plotting to kill is the very person that's going to save them. Several points in closing. Number one, God is in control whether good or bad. God was in control when his father showed him favor, and he was in control in the pit. It didn't make any difference. God was in control. When we cannot understand why we are in a certain position, we need to understand that God who sits on the throne is in control of our lives. Things are going to happen in your life. They are. Good things, bad things. But it doesn't matter whether it's good or whether it's bad. God is in control, and we've got to remember that. Two, we must realize when God prospers us not to be grieved when others become jealous. Joseph never asked for the coat. Joseph never asked for the dreams. Okay? He didn't ask for those things. He got them, but he didn't ask for them. And number three, we must trust God. We must trust that God has a plan for us, even if we do not understand his purpose. I am a big supporter of Reach. I was talking Sunday school this morning. I don't teach classes in Reach. Never have. But I am a supporter of Reach. You know why? Because I look at these young people here and have watched them grow up. And I have watched them mature. I have seen them stand in this pulpit and preach, lead singing, lead prayer, do the Lord's Supper. And I think that is a great thing. I think what the work that's been done through Reach is just wonderful. And I look forward to watching these young men grow up even further and take on the roles that some of us have right now. But we've got to trust in God. We We must trust that God has a plan for us, even if we don't understand His plan or His purpose. I hope you got something out of the lesson. There's a lot more to this story, and maybe when I preach again, we'll pick up where I left off and look at it further, because there's a lot of lessons in that particular story. Every time we meet, we give you an opportunity to come forward. For those who may not be a member of the Lord's body, we give you the opportunity to come forward and confess His name and be baptized. If you've got a problem, something you need to discuss with us, something you want us to pray for, then we give you the opportunity for that as we stand and sing.
Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me.